Today's date is March 9, 2017, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Philip Alexio in Washington. Coming up, undoing what is known as Obamacare and turning it into the American Health Care Act.
I think there is room for some change, but I think the bill is going forward with the things that we promised on.
Also ahead is the Islamic State leader, Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi, no longer in Mosul. Concern growing over the recent WikiLeaks dump. And is there a new ambassador to Russia? It's all on today's International Edition. Republicans in the U.S. Congress are under pressure to repeal and replace the Affordable Care Act, as they have been promising for 7 years. The law enacted during the Obama administration has allowed many previously uninsured Americans to obtain affordable health care. Now, this week, the House Republicans have been offering an alternative that has some shaky support, even within their own party. Conservative Republicans contend that the new plan still preserves too many parts of the so-called Obamacare, and moderates give it only tepid support. Democrats are rejecting the coverage cuts that will hurt low-income Americans. Zlatica Hoke reports that the House of Representatives committees began debating the bill on Wednesday. Now, she said that the plan replaces the subsidies from the current system with tax credits to help pay for insurance. It gradually ends government penalties for the uninsured, and it freezes the expansion of Medicaid, a government health insurance program for low-income families. Now, many Republicans said that it did not go far enough, like Jim Jordan and Rand Paul.
Is Obamacare in a different form?
I think it's dead on arrival. I don't think conservatives will vote for it.
Other Republicans, Hoke says, were more positive about the bill, like Doug Collins from Georgia.
I think there is room for some change, but I think the bill is going forward with the things that we promised on.
But President Donald Trump has called the plan wonderful, and Hoke says that he's urging House Republicans to pass it.
It's a complicated process, but actually it's very simple. It's called good health care.
On the other side, Hoke says Democrats like Mike Doyle from Pennsylvania are fiercely opposing the program, which they say will give major tax benefits to the rich and reduce coverage for low-income families.
Today, Republicans give you survival of the fittest, starring health care for the healthy and wealthy. For the rest of Americans, you're going to pay more money, you're going to get less coverage.
Some Democrats say a little known provision in the new plan would give tax benefits to insurance company executives that would cost taxpayers about $450 million. House Minority Leader Nancy Pelosi accusing Republicans of trying to rush the process before all the facts about their plan are understood.
What is it that the Republicans want to hide now? Is it the number of people who will lose their insurance? Is it 5, 10, 15, or 20 million people?
Several U.S. hospitals and doctors' groups criticizing the Republican bill, saying it would probably raise health care costs and force many patients to drop their insurance, so they say. But here to talk about more on this, especially with social media reaction, is Andrew Balcheski. And what are they saying about this health care issue?
Oh, there are a lot of divergent opinions about this bill. But one thing that I found fascinating was the big digital push that's going along with this. Of course, the Republicans are trying to read through the bill to mark it up in the committee to get it through. But at the same time, the Republicans are giving the American public an opportunity to look at and react to this bill. They have a website, readthebill.gop, GOP standing for Grand Old Party, which is another term for the Republicans. So if you go to readthebill.gop, you can actually download a PDF of the bill and read all 123 pages of it. Now, accompanying this is a hashtag they have, hashtag read the bill, and a number of members of Congress have been tweeting about this. There's also an unofficial hashtag, hashtag repeal and replace, which is the theme that a lot of Republicans have been using about this bill. But that first hashtag, hashtag read the bill, has been kind of interesting. As I mentioned, it's the official hashtag that they've been using on social media. However, it's kind of been co-opted by people opposed to this. They said, I've hashtag read the bill, and I don't like that it doesn't cover Planned Parenthood, or it has higher costs or less coverage. So it's being used by both sides to talk about the bill, whether it's good or bad, and kind of debate that back and forth.
Of course, I guess the only way to find out is to read it ourselves, right? And
absolutely
not trust these folks coming out on here with their partisan views. Now, what about, there's another thing, another topic trending today. The anniversary death of Notorious B.I.G.
Yep,
right?
Notorious B.I.G., Biggie Smalls, Christopher Wallace is his name, that he, his birth name, but most people know him as Notorious B.I.G. or Biggie. Died 20 years ago today in drive-by shooting in Los Angeles at the age of 24. One of the biggest names in rap music, one of the kind of the pioneers in the early 90s of rap music. And so lots of people mourning his death, even 20 years later, having a huge cultural impact and still culturally significant, especially for rap fans. Seeing a lot of people on social media putting screenshots of playlists on their phones of his music. Lots of people using this hashtag RIPBIG. And just mourning how untimely his death was, but what a huge contribution he made to American culture. And even now, after his death, is still making contributions, still being listened to today.
Yeah, and you know, and he had a they had a movie out on him, which I did see.
Notorious.
Notorious. I guess is that what it was called?
Yep.
And it's a
yep.
fantastic movie. If anybody has not seen it, that's worth watching. And I, have you had a chance to see it?
I haven't, but just I mean, just the fact that they made a movie about his life and at the age of 24. Had already had such an impact, that speaks volumes.
Now, I was reading in a quick headline on I don't know much about these rap guys, but did he just make one album and he was on his way to make another album or something like that?
Well, it was one album that was released, actually, I think it was about 2 weeks after he died, it was released, and it sold, I think, collectively his albums over 17 million copies. So even after his death, still... tons of fans, tons of respect in the music community for the work that he did in his all-too-short life.
Well, he was a big guy, and it has certainly been a big loss for the rap world. And thanks a lot, Andrew, for sneaking in here. We'll see you again tomorrow.
Sounds good.
All right, that's a look at what's going on social media. We got more coming your way. This is International Edition. All right, among the top stories in the world, China seeking an international agreement to enhance state control over the internet in order to fight cyber attacks and cyber terrorism. U.S. Marines have been deployed to northern Syria to help in the fight to retake the city of Raqqa from the Islamic State militants. Two suicide bombers walking into a wedding north of Baghdad as the party gathered in the evening hours, blowing themselves up and killing at least 26 people, wounding at least some 60 more. British lawmakers voting Wednesday to allow Prime Minister Theresa May to go ahead with proceedings for withdrawing Britain from the European Union. All these stories coming up and more. We have a rather expanded coverage of these on our website at VOA News. Follow it. And this is International Edition. Well, media reports.
This is Science in a Minute.
According to the World Health Organization, at least 100,000 of the nearly 5 million estimated annual victims of snake bite die. About 300,000 more people suffer from amputations and other permanent disabilities related to snake bites. Today's venomous snake bite treatment involves a slow and very expensive intravenous infusion of antivenom. Right now, these antivenom treatments are very specific to certain snake types and stop the damage affected by only a small number of species. University of California at Irvine chemists say they have come up with a way that could, someday, be a cheaper and more effective way to counter deadly snake venom. Researchers say they focused on families of proteins common to many serpents and created a polymer material that keeps toxins from bursting cell membranes and causing widespread destruction. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
And as I was saying before Rick interrupted me, media reports quoting U.S. and Iraqi intelligence sources say Islamic leader Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi is no longer in Mosul, where he declared an Islamic caliphate in 2014. They said that he has left the fight for Mosul to operational commanders and their die-hard followers against the weight of some 100,000 Iraqi-led government forces. Northeastern University political science professor Max Abrams, who has long studied Islamic State leadership, told VOA's Victor Beatty that Baghdadi has been very much a hands-off leader who delegated autonomy to lower-level fighters. He said it really doesn't matter whether he remains in Mosul or if he is still alive.
I know that there are reports where it sounds as if we've been tracking him, but until we directly hear from him, I won't be 100% persuaded, especially because there are cases where high-profile terrorist leaders turn out to be dead. So that was the case of Mullah Omar, in the Taliban. In all likelihood, he probably is alive, but I think that if he is alive, he'll be dead soon. And frankly, it probably won't change things. Already, Islamic State is on a downward trajectory, and his influence was always quite limited in terms of operation.
What do you make of this U.S. official quoted by the French press agency saying the Islamic State hopes to hold on to scraps of its self-declared caliphate? What scraps are we talking about?
Islamic State is a very opportunistic group. It sets up shop in areas basically where it can. And so that's why it set up shop in eastern Syria. That was an area that was certainly not as patrolled and not as busy as areas around Damascus. Islamic State has decentralized into other power vacuums where there's a lot of chaos and poor government, like in Yemen, in Afghanistan, in the northern Sinai area. I think this is a continuation of that strategy where Islamic State is under duress. It's going to spread out. And that's actually quite typical of terrorist groups is, you know, terrorist groups, they may seem really strong, but compared to governments, they're actually quite weak. And so the way that terrorist groups have tended to survive is by becoming more decentralized and more networked. It will be flushed out of these core cities of Mosul and Raqqa and try to set up shop, you know, where the area isn't as contested. For example, in the desert area in Deir ez-Zor, Islamic State is not new to Deir ez-Zor. It's been there for years. There have been skirmishes back and forth between the Syrian Arab Army and Islamic State. That's not an insignificant area because there's oil there. I think that it's not a situation where Islamic State could leave Raqqa and go to Deir ez-Zor and be left alone. I think that we're going to continue to hunt down Islamic State, and the group will have to decentralize even more than that.
That's Max Abrams from Northeastern University talking with VOA's Victor Beatty. Now, activists and local groups have said that the Islamic State has moved some of its high-ranking commanders and their families out of the Syrian city of Raqqa to the nearby relative safety of Deir ez-Zor province, even as U.S.-backed forces continue their push toward Raqqa, the self-proclaimed IS capital. The publication Stars and Stripes, whose target audience is the U.S. military community, quoted a U.S. defense official as saying Islamic State has lost almost all of its access to Iraqi oil, a source of revenue, and has about 15,000 fighters left in Iraq and Syria. You're listening to International Edition. This is VOA.
Jazz America.
This is Russ Davis, and on my program Jazz America, I carry on the tradition begun decades ago by the great Willis Conover by exploring the wonders of a century of jazz history. I'll cover it all from Dixieland to swing to bebop to modal, free jazz, fusion, world jazz, contemporary, and beyond. Plus, you'll hear the words of the artists themselves as they tell their incredible stories. Join me for Jazz America, Saturdays and Sundays at 13 hours Universal Time, online at voanews.com and the Voice of America.
News is mobile, and so are you. Get VOA on the go. Get VOA on Google Currents. Get VOA News specifically made for your tablet and smartphone. Clean, simple, fast. Now available for Android or Apple phones or tablets. Download the Google Currents app for free today. Get VOA on Google Currents at voanews.com/currents.
Hey, listen, concern is growing among foreign diplomats about WikiLeaks' recent dump of documents that purportedly shows details of sophisticated hacking tools used by U.S. intelligence agents. Now, when asked about the documents Thursday, today, Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov said he always tries not to bring his cell phone around with him into sensitive meetings to avoid being spied on. Lavrov, referring to allegations in the WikiLeaks documents that the Central Intelligence Agency has tools to hack into smartphones and some televisions, allowing the agency to remotely spy on people through microphones on the devices. Lavrov also said that while Russia's been blamed for recent hacks in the U.S. based on fingerprints left after the attacks, the WikiLeaks documents indicate the CIA has the ability to disguise its hacks and make them look like they were committed by other state actors, including Russia. In a statement, WikiLeaks said the CIA lost control of the majority of its hacking arsenal. The group said the cyber tools were disseminated among some former U.S. government hackers, one of whom gave the material to WikiLeaks. The CIA said Wednesday that WikiLeaks is hurting American security interests and helping the country's enemies. News outlets reporting that John Huntsman, who served as ambassador to China under former U.S. President Barack Obama, will be nominated by President Donald Trump as the nation's envoy to Russia. Sources saying the White House says that Huntsman has accepted President Trump's offer to serve in the post. Huntsman is a Republican. He served as a governor in the western U.S. state of Utah from 2005 to 2009 before resigning to take the Beijing post. Now, he briefly ran for president, if you remember, back in 2012. He also served as U.S. ambassador to Singapore under President George H.W. Huntsman's nomination comes at a time of increasing tensions and recriminations between Washington and Moscow, U.S. intelligence agencies accusing Russia of hacking the Democratic National Committee headquarters. Of course, the Russians are accused of releasing damaging emails in efforts to help Trump defeat Hillary Clinton in last year's presidential elections. The controversy has cast a shadow over the new Trump administration, especially over allegations that some of the president's key allies might have met with Russian officials during the campaign. Well, Lagos has long been known as Nigeria's pop culture hub. It's the home of Nigeria's film industry, Nollywood, as well as many of the country's top musicians and artists. But a group of rappers and fashion designers is creating a scene of their own in Kaduna in northern Nigeria, some 600 kilometers from Lagos. For VOA, Chika Adua takes us inside Kaduna's growing hip-hop scene.
There's Morel, DJ AB, Kings, Classic. These guys are part of a new generation of rappers. They're from Kaduna in northern Nigeria. On the surface, Kaduna is a quiet, conservative city. But there's another side. Like Jake's Tudu's weekly radio show where he plays the latest jams from local rap artists.
Yes, it's the number one radio show all the way from northern Nigeria.
Artists like Kevin Words. Jake's is a huge fan of Kevin Words.
Because a lot of people out there have this stereotype or this mindset that Kaduna artists are, Kaduna industry is full of mediocres. And when you hear people like Kevin Words, man, trust me, you want to sit up.
Ibrahim Ilya goes by the stage name IBI. In the video for his recent song, Alhamdulillah, he fuses local Fulani culture with American hip-hop style.
When I was young, I used to listen to rap a lot, and I fall in love with the rap. I fall in love with the rap music. And then right now, I do rap music because I love it.
His brother and sister enjoy having a local celebrity in the family. Most rappers in Nigeria end up going to Lagos to make it.
I'm not actually against people going to Lagos, but if Kaduna people, they can just build themselves alone, reach a certain level, I mean, Lagos is nothing now. We'll counter them.
So he works hard on the music and his look, which depends on fashion. Hussaina Raji, who owns a local fashion label, is teaching a group of aspiring tailors about hip-hop fashion.
I decided to blend hip-hop because that's what's selling right now in the market. Almost everybody wants to wear and feel like it. So we try as much as possible to make everything look it.
These are her designs, an edgy blend of urban and African. At YKP Clothing, DJ Jakes stops by to try on clothes. The Kaduna-based label is the vision of Patrick Yamai.
It's either fully African or it's fully English or fully, let's say, corporate. I had this dream of fusing the two, something that you could wear to the club and still wear to the office. Reception has been wonderful.
Yamai is an accounting graduate.
100% hip-hop.
While DJ Jake studied architecture in school. But they each found their calling in this local scene.
I am someone who has passion for northern talents.
He's doing the best he can to promote it. Chika Odua in Kaduna for VOA News. I got to calm down, put my
head up. Okay. Well, listen, a quick tip on some food habits here. Are you gorging on bacon and not eating enough nuts? These are among some of the food habits the new research links with deaths from heart disease and strokes and diabetes. You're either overeating or you're not eating enough of the 10 specific foods. This is a report coming out of the Associated Press. You got to have your good foods. And you're not eating enough nuts and seeds. You have to have seafood rich and omega-3 fats. You got to eat your salmon. You got to eat your sardines, your fruits and vegetables. Everybody knows that. But a lot of people stuffing the salt down, like processed meats. You're eating too much bologna, too much bacon, too much red meat, too many hamburgers, and too many steaks, and too many sugary drinks. So, word out. Watch what you're eating. This is International Edition. We'll see you tomorrow.
Next, an international public service announcement by the United States government.
Under its Rewards for Justice program, the U.S. State Department is offering up to $5 million for information leading to the location or identification of ISIL terrorist Tirad al-Jarba, better known as Abu Muhammad al-Shamali. Al-Shamali is a Saudi national who was born in Iraq in 1979. He has been associated with ISIL since 2005, when it was known as Al-Qaeda in Iraq. He now serves as a key leader in ISIL's Immigration and Logistics Committee and has been facilitating the travel of foreign terrorist fighters from Gaziantep, Turkey, to the border town of Jarablus in Syria. Al-Shamali and the Immigration and Logistics Committee coordinate smuggling activities, financial transfers, and the movement of supplies into Syria and Iraq from Europe, North Africa, and the Arabian Peninsula. In 2014, Al-Shamali facilitated the travel from Turkey to Syria of prospective ISIL fighters from Australia, Europe, and the Middle East, and managed ISIL's processing center for new recruits in Azaz, Syria. In September 2015, the United States Department of the Treasury placed al-Shamali on its specially designated nationals list for acting for or on behalf of ISIL. On the same day, he was also sanctioned by the United Nations Security Council, which imposed a travel ban, asset freeze, and arms embargo on al-Shamali. Since its inception in 1984, the U.S. State Department's Rewards for Justice program has paid in excess of $125 million to more than 80 people who provided actionable information that helped bring terrorists to justice or prevented acts of international terrorism worldwide. If you have information on Abu Muhammad al-Shamali, contact the Rewards for Justice office via the website at rewardsforjustice.net. Email at info@rewardsforjustice.net, phone at 1-800-877-3927, or mail at Rewards for Justice, Washington, D.C., 20520-0303, USA. All information will be kept strictly confidential.
That was an international public service announcement by the United States government.